Parsha Vayeshev from the Sefer HaSichos Tov Shin Nun Aleph. The Rebbe speaks about the title of the Parsha, Vayeshev, which the Gemara says, Bikish Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva, that after all the suffering that Yaakov had with Lavan, and then with Esav, and then with Dina, all the problems and disruptions of his life, he wanted to live in Shalva. He wanted to have a restful, peaceful existence. And we find that this peaceful existence was denied him, according to the Gemara, where the Gemara says that immediately when he wanted the peacefulness, the shalva, immediately the trouble with Yosef came about. And God says to Tzadikim, it's enough that you have shalva in the world to come, you don't have to have it also in this world. But at the same time, the Rebbe says, when a tzaddik desires or requests something, it must be that somewhere it is answered and it is given, granted. So it must be that this problem with Yosef was not a denial of the shalva, a refusal to give Yaakov the restfulness or the peacefulness that he desired, but rather it was the means by which he acquired it, as we will soon see. We find the same idea also by Yaakov, where Yaakov wanted to reveal to his children the time of the coming of Mashiach. So he called his children together, and he wanted to tell them, to reveal to them, Yigalu lehem es haketz. But the Shechina departed from him, and so he wasn't able to reveal it. Or he took the hint from the Shechina departing that he was not meant to reveal it. So there are these two opinions in the Gemara, that either that the Shechina departed telling him not to reveal when Mashiach was coming, or that the Shechina departed and he himself could not say when Mashiach was coming. What Yaakov wanted to tell his children, the Rebbe says, is not that Mashiach was going to come in 3,000 years, which would not be encouraging or inspiring, but rather he was telling them that the exodus from Mitzrayim, coming out of Egypt, could be the permanent and complete Geula, could be Mashiach, if they are deserving. And that was only 200 years away. And even those 200 years, if they are truly deserving, if they do something special, they could shorten that time as well. Just as the 400 years that God told Avraham that his children would be enslaved for 400 years, that was changed to 210 years. So we see that we can shorten the time through merit. So Yaakov was going to tell his children that Mashiach was coming in their lifetime if they do something special to deserve it. And that certainly is helpful, encouraging, and inspiring. However, the Shechina did not permit it. Because in order for the Geula to be a complete, total, permanent Geula, a thorough Geula, which is not followed by further Golos, it has to come from the bottom, from the people, from the earth itself. Which means that the Jews have to serve God and produce Mashiach, not through an inspiration from above, but through their own effort and through their own steam. So if Yaakov were to tell them that Mashiach is coming imminently, that inspiration would be coming not from within them, but from outside of them, from above, from the imminence of Mashiach. And that would in some way detract from the thoroughness of their Aveda, and therefore it would detract from the thoroughness of the Geula that would follow, that would result. And so God removed the Shechina from Yaakov so that he should not tell his children, so that they should serve God without knowing when Mashiach was coming, but trusting Achakele B'chol Yem Sheyovei. And by doing that, they created and prepared the world for the complete and true Geula without interference from above. And here are the two opinions of the Gemara. One opinion is that since Yaakov had to help them with this, he also had to be denied the information. He also had to serve God without inspiration from above. And therefore, he also forgot, or no longer knew, when Mashiach was coming. The other opinion is that by Yaakov, knowing when Mashiach was coming didn't add any inspiration. He was already on that level because of who he was, internally, thoroughly. He was on the level of Mashiach. And therefore, knowing when Mashiach was coming didn't detract from his aveda of self-motivated aveda. Through his self-motivated aveda, he was already in Mashiach. And therefore, he could help his children reach that same level without forgetting when Mashiach was coming. From this, the Rebbe says, we learn that even though it is God's cheshbon, and it is God's desire that the aveda come from the bottom, completely, without inspiration from above, yet Yaakov shows us that our desire and our attempt has to be to shorten the golus and bring Mashiach a moment closer by wanting to reveal the ketz and bringing it a moment closer, even if it is not the most thorough manner, which God will somehow fix. But our desire and our demand has to be that whatever purpose there may be in waiting any longer for Mashiach, we don't want to wait, we want Mashiach now. And also, that when Yaakov desired to reveal the coming of Mashiach to his children, it must have had an effect and it must have been successful. And the effect was, in fact, that for a long period of time, the aura of Mashiach was felt in the world because Yaakov wanted to reveal him, and as a result, Jews were able to keep mitzvahs and live as Jews without interference from other nations or from their internal yetzahara. And that, b'makif, is the light of Mashiach, or the effect of Mashiach. The thorough result of Mashiach is that the nations not only don't interfere or don't discourage Jews from living like Jews, but they themselves start to live by the laws of Torah, by the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Nayach, and actually help the fulfillment of the Tayag Mitzvot. And so the same is true also with Bikesh Yankiv Leishev B'Shalva, that this peacefulness and restfulness that Yaakov requested or sought must have been fulfilled. And in fact, we find that there were two periods where Yaakov actually had the shalva. One was the 9 years that he shared with Yosef while they lived be'eretz megurei aviv, while they lived in Israel. Those were 9 good years. And then, after Yaakov and all his children came down to Mitzrayim, they had 17 good years. In fact, the best years of his life were the 17 years in Mitzrayim, where he lived b'shalva. Now, the difference between the first 9 years and the later 17 years is that the first 9 years was in Eretz Yisrael, be'eretz megurei aviv, in the place where his parents lived, which means in a place of holiness. So there was a shalva, a restfulness, a peacefulness in a place of holiness, the Eretz Megurei Aviv, which does not compare to the peacefulness that can be accomplished or acquired even in Eretz Mitzrayim, Ervas Ha'aretz, in a place of unholiness. Even there, Yaakov had a restfulness and a peacefulness, a shalva, that were the best 17 years of his life. But how can that happen? How can it be that in a place of unholiness you have not only survival, but actually shalva, a restful, peaceful existence of holiness in a place of unholiness? For this, the rest of the parsha tells us the episodes, the troubles of Yosef. And with this we'll understand why the title of the Sedra, the title of the Parsha, is Vayeshev, which implies peacefulness and restfulness, and yet the entire Parsha speaks about the tumultuous events of Yosef, and then later of Yehuda. In order to bring this Shalva into Mitzrayim, Yosef had to go down to Egypt. Yosef means an addition, Hesafa. And that's why he was named Yosef, because his mother said, Yosef li Hashem bein acher. God should add, increase, give me an additional son like this one. But the words are ben acher, that God should add to me another son to make from the other, from the stranger, to make a son. In other words, to bring the stranger into the family and make him part of the family. To make a son out of an acher. And this is the quality of Yosef's neshama, of the soul of Yosef, where Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all represented godliness as it exists in this world. Avraham was godly love, and Yitzchak was godly fear, and so on. Yaakov was godly compassion. That was all the place of godliness, the state of godliness as it appears in this world, but not beyond that. Yosef's neshama was beyond godliness present on earth. It was the ability to reach beyond the place of godliness into a place of ungodliness and there reveal the holiness that is buried or hidden in the unholy. That's why his name was Yosef. And that's why he disagreed with his brothers. They demanded insisted that in order to be holy you have to be a shepherd away from the corruption of society. And Yosef insisted that you have to be in society and yet not only not be affected negatively by the society, but to have a positive effect on the society and bring godliness into the acher, into the place of ungodliness, and turn it into a bane, into something godly. And so when Yosef went down to Egypt, when his brothers were selling him as a slave to be taken down to Egypt, the Torah tells us, or the Medrash says, that God was reading the minds of the players involved, and he said that the tribes were busy, the brothers, Yosef's brothers, were busy thinking of how to sell him. Yehuda was busy thinking how they should get married. And so he left the other brothers and he went off to get married. And what was God thinking? God was thinking that it is time for the light of Mashiach to be revealed, to be born. And so Yehuda met Tamar, and from that union, Peretz was born, who was the great-great-grandfather of Mashiach. So the Gemara asks, why does the Torah interrupt the narrative about Yosef and tell us the story of Yehuda? And the simple explanation is, because Yehuda went to give birth to Peretz just as Yosef was being taken into slavery into Egypt. So the coming of Mashiach, represented by his great-grandfather Peretz, is the antidote to the exiles which began with Mitzrayim, with Egypt. So it's a case of where God prepares the antidote before the illness. So before the Golus, the suffering in Egypt actually began, the light of Mashiach was introduced into the world, which is the antidote to Golus, the complete and permanent redemption. But on an even deeper level, the birth of Peretz, Paratzta Alecha Peretz, is not only the antidote preceding the problem, but is actually an integral part of Yosef himself, so that it's really not an interruption in the narrative at all. And that is as follows. The idea of Yosef is the addition, bringing the unholy to holiness, reaching out to the acher and making him a ben. Peretz was born with a twin brother. But before his older brother was able to deliver, to present himself, Peretz pushed his way through and was born first. And so the midwife said, Loma paratzta alecha Peretz. Why do you break through the borders or the rules? And so she called him parrots. So the Rebbe points out that this expression, paratzta alecha peretz, is like a double dose of Yosef. Yosef means reaching beyond the border of holiness into the place of unholiness, and there producing the holiness. So it's a form of breaking through a barrier, a yin of pritza, but it is the breaking through of the barriers that separate the holy from the unholy, and bringing holiness to the place of unholiness. Paratzta alecha peretz means a double breaking through, a double overcoming of borders. And that implies that in addition to overcoming the border that separates the holy from the unholy, we need to overcome even the borders of holiness itself. Because holiness also comes in certain forms. There is the love of Avraham, the fear of Yitzchak. Holiness also has its properties. There's a certain amount of holiness that God invests in the world or reveals in the world. Breaking through that barrier and bringing a greater holiness into the world, that is the idea of peretz. So in order to truly overcome the golus, to truly accomplish what Yosef is supposed to accomplish by breaking through the barrier that separates holy from unholy, the ability to be a tzaddik even in Egypt, the ability to bring godliness even into worldly activities and so on, and ultimately bring Mashiach into the world, This requires also the second breaking through, the paratzta alecha peretz, breaking through also the limits of godliness or holiness itself. And as the Rebbe points out, paratzta alecha peretz, it's not paratzta olav peretz, that peretz pushed his way past his brother, but paratzta alecha peretz, you pushed yourself away. Meaning to say, you overcame your own limitations, the limitations of holiness. And that's the difference between Peretz and his brother Zerach, and Yaakov and Esav. They were also twins, but the struggle between Yaakov and Esav is understandable because it is the struggle between good and evil. So when they were fighting and they each wanted to be born first and Yaakov was holding on to the heel of Esav, it is the struggle of goodness trying to overcome the evil. But Peretz and Zerach were both tzaddikim. So what was the need that Peretz felt to reach out and be born first and break through the normal order of things? If Zerach would have been born first, it wouldn't have been terrible because he was a tzaddik. So we see that there's a need to break through the limitations even of holiness, even of a tzaddik. And also, as a result, his name became Peretz. It wasn't just some additional thing, some activity that he had engaged in, which was not his essence, but this became his name. He became Peretz. That was his quality of his neshama, that he overcomes all the restrictions, even the restrictions of holiness. And together, that's what makes up the dwelling place, the Dira B'Tachtenim, that God desires. That in order for the world to become truly a dwelling place for God, it has to have these two qualities. On the one hand, it has to be the world itself become receptive to holiness, and that is reaching into the unholy, Yosef, going down into Egypt and there creating holiness. That prepares the world to be a vessel, to be receptive for godliness. But then also you have to have the Vayechi Yaakov, that you have to have the godliness that comes into this vessel, into this home that has now been prepared and is now receptive to be a dwelling place for God. Now you have to bring all of God, Atzmus. You have to bring God himself into the home, and not only the Shekhinah or some aspect of God. Because a true dwelling place is a dwelling place where a person can be himself completely. And that's why the story of Yosef and the story of Yehuda are all a continuation of the theme of Vayeshev, of the peace and the contentment that Yaakov desired, because in order to have a contentment, even in this world, even in the land of Egypt, even in a place of unholiness, this comes about through Yosef and through Peretz. Yosef prepares the unholy to make it receptive to holiness, and then Peretz breaks through the limitations of godliness, the restrictions on godliness, and reveals the essence of God in the dwelling place. And that is the function of Mashiach, that in the coming of Mashiach, the world itself will be ready. The world itself will be receptive to holiness. And at the same time, or on the other hand, Mashiach reveals Teirah Hadosha in the generation of Mashiach. Chassidus is revealed and taught on all levels, available to all levels. And that is understanding God himself, understanding the essence of God. Atzmus, available in a keli, Atzmus available to the human mind and to the human heart, so that you have this combination of shalva, of a peacefulness and a restfulness. When the two come together, the highest of the high and the lowest of the low, the ben that was once an acher, the unholy that becomes holy, but not in the ordinary holiness, but paratzta alecha peretz, the breakthrough of holiness, which is a reference to Mashiach, who is called the peretz, because he takes down all the limitations on Torah and reveals the essence of Torah, the inner part of Torah, which is also the inner part of God, and then also the inner part of the neshama, so that you have the fulfillment in the actual experience in life, that Torah and God and the Jewish neshama are really all one.